Good evening, everybody. Listen out there at home. We are the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. I am Mike DePalma. Our producer, Tony D, is out in Costa Rica, probably testing out the local fair. And my co-host, Neil Lynch, is out in Paris, just working on a designer jean line, I guess. I don't know what he's doing in Paris, but he's out in Paris, probably promoting the Tri-State Sports Guys all throughout Europe. So we have a very special guest co-host. He was one of the first TSG superfans, probably one of the first people to like us on Facebook. He's called in. He's on the message board all the time. From O'Neill's Pub and Grill in Norwalk, Kevin Ireland. Kevin, welcome to the program, my brother.
Howdy ho, partner.
Here it is.
You call him the cowboy for nothing. So Cowboy will be in studio. We're going to get to a lot of stuff today. But we're going to do something we've never done on the Tri-State Sports Guys before. We're going to start with some NHL hockey. We dabbled into a little hockey. We kept teasing that we were going to do a big preview of the playoffs, which we obviously never did because we don't follow hockey. But even a extreme casual hockey fan like myself appreciates playoff hockey. There's nothing like it. Nothing like a playoff hockey game. It's just amazing.
It's one of those things you can flip back and forth between basketball and hockey, and you're watching the Pacers-Knicks, and I would rather watch a playoff hockey game over the Pacers-Knicks.
100%.
So many fouls being called, I couldn't get the flow of the game.
Right. You only got to watch. Yeah, right. Normally, playoff basketball, you watch the fourth quarter, and then that series, no fourth quarter matters.
There was a whistle every 5 seconds in that game.
Yeah, and the Knicks are still complaining about everything. I mean, every time there's any foul call on either side, the Knicks are throwing their hands up in the air. It's amazing. We'll have plenty of time to get to the Knicks, which we will get to in a minute. But we got to start with our New York Rangers. Now, you're a Rangers fan.
Big time.
Let me ask you this, as I'll start the question. So, you work at O'Neill's, which has been great to us, sponsor the show. We've had some shows live there before. Have you been working during any of these games, any of these playoff games, and what's the atmosphere? Because there's no bigger rabid fan base in this area than Rangers fans.
It's a very awkward fan base here in Connecticut, as everybody knows. Very confusing state.
Ever since we left the Whale.
Ever since the Whale left, you get a little bit of a mix, believe it or not, of the Carolina Hurricanes, because that's where they went to.
Sure.
But mostly Ranger fans down here. You dabble with the Islanders. They had a tough series, but you saw them come out. But you also see the Bruins fans.
Yeah.
And they are out there. They're everywhere. Just, they love their sports, and they love their hockey just as much as baseball up there. Right now, it's a good feel for the Rangers. The way that Lundqvist closed out Game 6 and Game 7, both with shutouts. I think he's the fourth NHL hockey goalie ever to do that in history, and it should be fun because once your team goalie is that much on, and you could look at last year for the LA Kings, they rode on Mike Quick, the Milford man, and he pretty much won them the cup.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if Lundqvist continues the way he's playing, and he's right now he's shutout hockey, they're gonna have a hard time beating him. But at the same time, for them to have to shutout hockey, they blocked a lot of shots.
Yep.
They made hard for shots to get on goal. I mean, I think they had, like, close to 40 block shots in the game. And when it's hard to get shots on net and get a rebound or get a clear shot, you start taking bad percentage shots just to take a shot and
yeah.
Hopefully get on net.
Yeah, because, I mean, he had that shutout in Game 7, but I think he only had, like, 23 saves, 25 saves. It wasn't, like, a ridiculous statistic game as far as saves go.
Correct.
But what's interesting about the Rangers, and before the season started, we had JT, used to be on the show regularly,
yep.
Our intern from Connecticut School of Broadcasting, and he's still a friend of the show. He'll come on from time to time, but he's our big hockey guy and big Rangers fan. And I remember going through right before the season started, when they finally, the lockout ended and all that, and they decided that they were going to play hockey, and we went through the Vegas odds. And the Rangers were number one. They were tied, I believe,
right
with the Capitals or somebody else, where they were tied for the biggest favorite to win the Stanley Cup. And so it was obviously they had up to that atrocious start. They had injuries. There was a question whether they were going to even make the playoffs as late as like a week left in the season. You know, four or five games they needed to, and then they wound up somehow getting into the sixth seed, improbably considering how their series went. And then they go down 2-0, and it's like, man, the Rangers fans were just after dying for some NHL hockey. They did not see this season going the way it was. This was supposed to be their season. They were supposed to have these young guns who came on towards the end of last season, like Kreider and the rest of them. They were going to step up, and we got Nash, and we got, you know, Brad Richards and all these guys, and none of them really performed. And for them to turn that around, being down 2-0, and come back and win that series, you know, hockey more than any other sport, any team could win as far as playoffs go. I mean, you saw last year with an 8 seed. So, and that's not uncommon. And that's why, you know, you've seen teams come back from 3-0 in the NHL, where you never see that in the NBA, and you only see it once in baseball. And so you see that in hockey, and it all goes back to the goalie play. You get a goalie, you get a goalie stand on the head, and then you start getting some breaks, you hit the post and they go in instead of going out, you know, those type of things. Deflection goals, those type of things. So really, I mean, it would not shock anybody as of being a casual hockey fan to see the Rangers go on a run and win it. I mean, it really wouldn't.
In hockey, what you see all the time is they call it two seasons. And you have the regular season, and then you make it to the playoff, then it's a whole fresh start because anything can happen in the playoff.
Yep.
So you play for the season to get into the second season, and once you get in there, you got to have, like you said, some bounces bounce your way, and you got to have a hot goalie. What helped out the Rangers big time was the third and fourth lines were putting some goals in the net.
Yeah, guys, they got in that trade.
Guys, Broussard right now, for Gavrik, every Ranger fan is forgetting about Gavrik right now. They're not even talking about Gavrik. As much as we loved him last year and how much he was a threat to score goals, there was always something about him where he couldn't get us to that next level to score a goal and when we needed to in the playoffs. But now you got this guy, Broussard, who's standing on like on a pedestal towards everybody else, contributing almost at every play when they score a goal.
Yeah.
When you think of guys like Rick Nash, you think he'll be the one to do it. Big-time guy, all-star name. Yeah, and he's not.
You're fighting him in the box.
He's not. I mean, the last game, he got himself involved in plays to help their team put themselves in a scoring position.
Yeah.
But they never capitalized on the plays he was involved in. Broussard is a guy that creates plays and scores goals or is part of creating a play and end result is a goal.
Yeah. Now, the team they're going to be playing is obviously another great story with Boston, with everything that went off in Boston, obviously. They go into Toronto. They had the fans and the crowd wearing the Toronto Stronger jersey. I didn't have this huge problem with that. It's just this huge offense to it. That's sports. It's almost like we're beyond it. I mean, you're not going to find friendlier people in the world than Canada.
Yeah.
So it's not like these are the friendliest. It's the friendliest nation in the world. It's definitely in the Western Hemisphere. It's the friendliest nation there is. And you couldn't find those three guys that were in those jerseys. You couldn't find three people in the whole city of Boston nicer than them. Because everybody in Boston's a jerk. I mean, no offense to our Boston listeners. I love them, but they're jerks. It's their personality. It's part of New England, I guess. And so for them to have that, you know, going on, and then they fall down 4-1, and they're down 4-1 in the third period. And everybody, I mean, you talk about changing the channel. You're changing the channel at that point. 4-1 in hockey, you're not coming back from that. They force overtime. They win the game. How worried are you about momentum? I mean, you talk about the momentum that the Rangers have, coming back from down 2-0, disappointing regular season, wipe the slate clean, we're in the second round. Well, you got Boston, who might have even more momentum going for them. I mean, are you worried about that, or do you think at this point those two factors kind of cancel themselves out and it's going to be just wipe the slate clean, best team's going to win?
That's a great question because –
You know how in
NHL, when you're on the road and you're in that kind of environment, when their home fans are going crazy, the whiteout towel's going, it's a difficult environment to be playing in. And the way the Rangers closed that game 7 out, killing them 5-0 and leaving no doubt that we're going to the next round, is a good game to roll off into the next round. But then you go into Boston's situation where you're like, oh, man, if I was a Boston fan, I would be sick to my stomach because we had the game in hand. And now you have the series out of hand. And then all of a sudden, it's the snap of a finger, you're going into the playoffs, scoring and winning, going into overtime, scoring a winning goal, facing the Rangers in the second round. So it's a tough situation that for either team to be in. They're both rolling on such high wins that they're happy to be where they are, where they kind of didn't have a chance. But right now, if I had to choose either one, I would have this. I mean, I'm a Rangers fan. Of course, I'm going to say this. But it's going to be a tight series, and I believe the Rangers will win in 7. Sole reason, Henry Lundqvist is better than
King Henry
is better than the Boston goalie right now.
Yeah, and you know what? Even though they're two different sports, the rivalry between New York and Boston is like no other. And that goes across all sports. And so the fact that the Knicks beat down, the Celtics in that game six there, the fact that they staged them up in game five where they wore the black and all that, Boston fans have got to be so happy to be playing the New York Rangers as a chance to, like, redeem the city. You know what I mean? So when they go into Boston, that crowd is going to be crazy. Now, I've been to Rangers games. The only professional hockey that I've seen has been Rangers, and it's the most insane atmosphere I've been to. It's crazy. From first puck being dropped to the last whistle. So it's crazy. But I got to imagine up in Boston, it's going to be just insane.
Just put it this way. Their fans' emotions are running so high right now because of the unfortunate events that happened up there during the Boston Marathon. You posted the Boston crowd at the Bruins game singing the national anthem. I don't care what fan you are.
Oh,
you got
chills.
Chills running down your
100%. Spine. I shared everybody in my office. It gave me the absolute chills. And you see the guy who sings every time, sings and he just steps back and lets him sing. You couldn't script that. If it was in a movie,
I was singing
with
him watching it. I was crying.
It was crazy, man. So it's going to be exciting. And like I said, for anybody who likes sports, you have to like playoff hockey. I don't care who you are. You have to like it. And it's more entertaining than certainly both series in the Eastern Conference right now for the NBA because, there's just not much going on. It's lopsided games. After the game one, in Miami, where Chicago came out one and shocked the world. Since then, they've been non-existent, and everybody expected that. And then the series in New York between the Knicks and the Pacers, it's been just been lopsided game after lopsided game. So it's not, it's all four games have been blowouts, really. And there hasn't been intense fourth quarters in that series yet.
You know what the thing is, too, is playoff hockey. They played Game 7 the next night.
Yeah.
So you're still involved in the series. You're still involved of what happened the night before when the Rangers won at home. And it was such a, excitement. We're going to Game 7. We're going down to D.C. to play the Capitals. Basketball, you beat the Pacers. Then you go on a three-game break. Not saying that they're not going to have another three-game break throughout the series. But it gets you out of the loop.
100%. Even as a fan, it's like you get out of the flow. But as a player, think about that. Think about how much that helped the Rangers, like, playing the next night.
You're right out of the
high. You're just like, we're getting right out. You play sports. You play college lacrosse. You play games. You get to, like, a tournament where you're playing, like, every day. There's no more intense sports feeling than playing every day against, we won this game. You ride that high. You go out, party with your friends a little bit. Get a good night's sleep. Get back. You're like, wake up, just like today's the day.
Yeah.
Whereas in the NBA, it's like, okay, we just won a big game. You wake up, there's a shoot around at 2:00. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'll just sit around and wait for a shoot around.
If the Rangers had to play the Capitals 3 days later for Game 7, not saying they wouldn't have won, it wouldn't have been 5.
It would have been 5-0.
It would have been 5-0.
But it'll be exciting. I'm with you. I think at this point, the Rangers, and maybe because I'm pulling for them, I do think. The Rangers are going to take this series. Now, the only other question I have for you, hockey-related, and move on to the NBA quick, but as a Rangers fan, were you still pulling for the Islanders a little bit in that series? I mean, the intensity in the Nassau Coliseum, that you knew could be possibly their last game ever in the Nassau Coliseum. Even as, I'm a casual Rangers fan, so I was definitely pulling for the Islanders. It was like, and there a guy came on Francesca's show and said he's never been in any sports environment similar to that game, how crazy it was. So are you a little disappointed they did not see the Islanders move on in their last season in Long Island?
I was disappointed. I mean, I wasn't overly disappointed, but I would want to see them. Anybody right now wants to see the Pittsburgh Penguins get knocked out.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
They're one of the top teams right now, one of the top favorites to win the Cup, but besides that, they had such a good story going on in Long Island there, but now this is their farewell tour in Long Island, and now they're going to go to Brooklyn. You want to see them go out in style, and personally, I think they did.
Yeah.
They went out with a fight, and that's, to me, the type of Long Islander hockey was with how they played that series. You haven't seen that fight in the Islanders in such a long time that when you saw that, you know you're gonna see the Islanders there for in the playoff contention for a long. They got the guy Tavares, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, yep.
They have good young studs. So when they go to Brooklyn,
their goalie they got on contract for another 15 years.
Oh lordy, day! By the way, he's sitting up in Bridgeport, not even playing there
for the Sound Tigers. Yeah.
DPH. All
right, so I lied. I got one more hockey question,
sure.
And it's more of a global question. So obviously, this is a Rangers town, a Rangers area. It's clearly been shown by the fact that the Devils have been just a ridiculously successful franchise, and they haven't cracked into the market at all. I mean, the Devils are as successful as a franchise as there is in this out of the nine major sports teams last decade, and they haven't cracked at all. Now, there was some time, and I'm a big Nets fan, but I was never under any belief that the Nets would ever take over this town. I never believed that. But there was talk that moving to Brooklyn, maybe they could take it over. I think that's ridiculous. Is there any chance that moving to Brooklyn allows the Islanders to grow their fan base to the point where they can compete with the Rangers?
No.
I don't think so. They're going to get the hipsters. It's going to be ironic to go to, yeah.
I'll give you the reason why. You look at the Brooklyn Nets right now.
Yeah.
They're a playoff team. So are the Knicks. Who are people following more?
About a doubt.
The difference is, and it all has to go down, you're playing in the biggest city in the world, Madison Square Garden. You already have that fan base there.
Yeah.
Right? And it's cool to say, hey, we're playing in Brooklyn and one of the five boroughs, but you're always going to be the little brother. Now, how to get past that is going farther than the Knicks, and then you'll pull some of the Knicks, going farther than the Rangers in the playoffs, and then you get a couple of bandwagon Ranger fans. That's how you get past that.
I think it'll be easier for the Nets to take over some sort of market share over the Knicks than they would be in hockey. And I'll say this, because the fans in hockey, it's a small group. It's like a close-knit community of diehard hockey fans, but they are diehards. And you don't get diehards to just go fly by the night like, oh, I'm going to switch teams. Football, you'll see it some. Baseball, you'll definitely see it. Because in the 80s, the Mets dominated New York.
So did the Islanders.
So did the Islanders, right.
Islanders were top franchise.
Right. But even then, they weren't able to capture and keep it. Like, it's not the Rangers have been a successful franchise. Clearly, the Knicks haven't either. But I think hockey fans, you're a hockey fan because your dad is a hockey fan. And it's like, you know, it's like me. I'm a Mets fan because my father was a Mets fan. There's nothing that's going to happen that's going to make me not be a Mets fan.
Yeah.
I think Ranger fans are this tenacious, like, close-knit community of Ranger fans. With every game, they sell out all the time. There's nothing that's going to happen that's going to change that. Now, you might see attendance in Brooklyn go up, but I feel like hockey, you know, in this area is going to kind of sell out. But I don't think you're going to get the diehard hockey fans to switch. At least
No, never.
No way.
So you'll never, ever see that with any team. The only time you'll see it switch is if they change franchise like the Whalers did down to Carolina, and they just follow them down to Carolina. I mean, you might see them switch from, you know, I was a Whaler fan, now I'm going to be a Bruins fan, that kind of switch. But you won't see them switch as long as they're there. You're not going to see them switch any franchise.
Yeah. All right, so I've just spent 20 minutes on hockey.
Hockey.
Flew right by. Fastest 20
that,
minutes.
That's how good the playoff hockey is.
Yeah, that's what it's about. So we spent 20 minutes on playoff hockey, we're going to spend 5 minutes on playoff basketball before we get into some other stuff. The Knicks.
They're done.
Knicks seem to be done. And I'm a little shocked at how the series is going. Now, I've been on the Pacers band, and I listen to the show. I've been a big fan of the Pacers and an even bigger fan of Paul George from the beginning of the season. I think that guy is not an emerging superstar. He's a superstar right now. I love that guy. And I think they were my number two best team in the East this whole season. But I am surprised at really how they've gone just from their first two games against Boston. Ever since then, they've really just fallen apart. And in this series, you know, they had that good win in game two, but it just, you know, I know everybody's pointing to J.R. Smith. He's not making the shots and all that, and I get all that. But it's still going to come down to Carmelo Anthony. And that's why I give them a glimmer of hope, because he is one of the three or four guys in this league that can literally, when he is on and he gets on and nobody can guard him, he could win you 3-4 games in a row without anybody having any say in it. That'll just be, okay, I'm going to win this game. I don't care who's in it. I've seen him do it against the Nets. I've seen him do it against the Heat. And so I give them a glimmer of hope. But the way they're all the infighting and the non-existence of a guy like Jason Kidd, who at the beginning of the season was really impactful. He hasn't scored since game two of the Boston series. He hasn't scored a point. I know he's going to score. But they're getting significant minutes and not score a point. And now that's, what, 8 games?
It's sick.
So what's the feel at O'Neill's Pub? I mean, I'm sure
there's a huge Knicks base.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is, and I'm sure they go down. Watching basketball is a good, you know, it's like football, especially playing. We go down, watch at a bar. It's a lot of fun. So what's the sense? I mean, are they giving up, or is there still Knicks fans have that, like, cockiness to them where I still think they're not giving up hope?
They're not giving up hope, and to be honest with you, they have no reason to, because the shots that the Knicks are missing are wide open shots.
It's weird.
It's not like they're taking, like, prayers and they're throwing up bricks and trying to – they're wide open and they're not hitting those shots. If they start hitting those shots and the Pacers aren't covering them, they're going to be in trouble. But right now, the Pacers are in the driver's seat, and the Knicks fans have fear in the back of their minds because this game could be over in one game. See you later. Pack your bags. And it would be a little bit of a disappointment because I think, personally, the Knicks were thinking too far ahead and were already thinking about the Miami Heat, that they forgot about the Pacers, and the Pacers are coming out and just bullying them around.
Yeah.
Tyson Chandler getting pushed around up there.
The defensive player of the year from a year ago.
Yeah.
Now
First team all defense NBA. He's getting pushed around up there.
Yeah. It is an interesting series in that, you know, they're two such different teams. You know, the Pacers are somewhat like the old Pistons teams from, like, the early 2000s, where they just have a collective group of guys who can come at you and score, play team defense.
Great coach.
They're always looking for that extra pass, getting easy buckets. They find their weakness and they'll exploit it for that game. And if Woodson counteracts it with something else, then they'll find another way to score. But, you know, the problem I have is, you know, I listen to Francesa, even though I can't stand him. I listen to him, and he's there talking about the Knicks aren't playing their game. They are playing. They hoisted up, like, 28 three-pointers last night, and they only made, like, whatever, 9 of them or whatever it was. They just didn't shoot.
I don't even think they made that many.
Yeah, whatever it was, though, they were shooting. I mean, their game all season long has been live or die by the three, which is one of the reasons why I didn't think they were going to be a good, successful playoff team, and I said that 3 months ago. And you're finding it out now. They're not changing their game. It's not like all of a sudden now they're just pounding the ball into Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
They're still shooting free. They're just not making them. And
they're open shots, too. They're just flat out missing open shots.
Yeah. And so, you know, how to counteract it. I mean, look, we're going to get into a little bit more about Amari a little later on. But you look at Amari Stoudemire, as badly as they lost last night, his plus minus, he was in the positive last night in his 12 minutes that he played. Does he need to get more time? I think so, because they have a scoring problem.
They need
some. They don't have a huge defensive problem. They have the Pacers who scored 93 points last night.
Yeah.
Like that. It's not like they have a huge, you know, they're going to give up some points in the paint with him on the floor because he's not a great defender. But they are a team that feeds off each other. You get him in there and he makes 3-4 buckets or something like that, then that gets everybody hot. And that gives, now they have to draw some more attention. Maybe those open threes are a little more open and J.R. Smith starts hitting them. Maybe Carmelo starts hitting them. It's like, that's where I think they need to look more, even like Copeland comes in the game and makes some shots. And the same knock on him is he isn't playing defense. That's all fine and good, but he's had explosive games for the Knicks this year where you look at him, you're like, this guy could, if he got minutes, he could be a double-figure scorer in this league if he got 25 to 30 minutes. He could definitely score. Maybe that's where they got to go. And that's not changing who they are. Their whole team has been based around their defense is actually worse under Woodson in his tenure than it was under D'Antoni. So it's not like he was this big defensive mind who changed the culture. They've always been the same team. They are a team that needs to shoot the three and they need to go on these crazy runs like they did in game two. They won that 32 run. That's their team. And if that means giving Amari Stoudemire more minutes, then that means giving Amari Stoudemire more minutes. That's my opinion.
You know, they went on a 32 run after the Pacers coach called a timeout and then slowed down the game, and the Knicks came out and went on a huge run.
Yep.
Which, if he didn't call that timeout, who knows? They might be game over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it could be.
So,
you think they win here next game?
You know, I do think they'll win in the next game.
They can't rattle three in a row.
I don't think they can rattle off three in a row.
Even if they do win the next, even if they do steal one in Indiana, they're not going to win three in a row.
It's going to be tough. And like I said, they have to hit their open shots. They're a team that hit average, I believe it was like 11 three-pointers a game. They got to hit the three-pointers they take.
Yeah.
If you're open and you're taking a shot, I'm not saying hit every shot. You're shooting 35% on the field. You got to throughout the series, you got to be shooting better than that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to shoot 35%, you're not going to win any game.
Yeah, exactly. You can't win. You can't win that way. Yeah. Exactly. So that'll be interesting. The other series around the NBA, I mean, you know, the Heat are going to win that series without a doubt. Everybody's jumping on the Grizzlies bandwagon. But I'll tell you, look at these Spurs. That Spurs.
Oh,
I think the Spurs. Golden State series, the winner of that's going to win the West. I don't care what. I know everybody's all about the Grizzlies, but I like both of those teams. And I think that's an extremely entertaining series to watch. I think the Spurs hang on, and you can see the Spurs get played in the finals, and it'll be interesting to see.
The
cat and mouse game that they played with when they did play Miami, and they didn't even dress any of their stars and that type of thing, and that pissed off Miami fans, and they complained to the commissioner and all that.
Yeah.
I think that'll be interesting to see because it was, you know, the last real, you know, they were a dynasty over the last decade. How many championships they won with Duncan and all that, to give them one last little hurrah with Duncan. They do have some youth there with Green and Leonard. So, you know, that's a team that just keeps reloading. And it'll be exciting. I don't know. The West, we knew, was going to be a more exciting conference to watch throughout the playoffs. It's clearly been that way. And it's still anybody's game in that series, and then whatever the Grizzlies do, you know, a team that could trade away a guy like Rudy Gay and get better, it's like the Gavitt trade, really.
You know what's good about the West is that you usually see, you know, the Lakers here and teams like that sort of, that, like the Spurs always there, but like the Grizzlies do have a good story, and it's good to see them where they are, and I'm pulling for those guys to kind of go on and make a name for themselves in the playoffs. Because whenever you see a team like that, you always want to root for the
underdog. Yeah, of course, yeah.
When you're not, as long as you're not against your favorite team.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, transitioning over to baseball, but sticking with the same tight conundrum we were just talking about with Amari Stoudemire, there was always this question, was he even going to play in the playoffs? Is that going to screw things up? Well, now we move over to the Bronx. And we have a similar situation developing that I don't think people are giving enough attention to with this Curtis Granderson thing. It is, like, so parallel to what happened in the Knicks with Amari Stoudemire. You have a guy clearly is a superstar in Curtis Granderson. Okay, 40 home runs back-to-back seasons. Doesn't hit for a high average. You got to play him.
Got to play him.
But you look at the ragtag group that the Yankees have had, which you haven't seen that from the Yankees in my lifetime, where you've seen a team like this. We have Jeter out, Teixeira out, Euclid out, the Granderson out, all these guys out. And they're just winning games. They're the best record in baseball since April 7th, 24-10.
That's right. Seven.
And, you know, last night they called down to King Felix. King Felix gets pulled out, and they could put up a four spot and win that game last night. You wonder. Now, Vernon Wells, who we all kind of joked around about when they got that trade.
Vernon.
Guy, he hit another home run today, right?
Another home run.
Of the season. Yeah, Pronk has been great. I mean, the guy got an on-base percentage near 400, hitting home runs, you know, hitting doubles, doing everything he needs to do as your left-handed DH. Now, you know, I know he's out for a couple days, like a little day-to-day thing, but he's going to be back, and you have to start wondering, Granderson's got to play. Ichiro's got to play. Vardy's got to play. They're going to now, go into a platoon with Vernon Wells and Pronk at DH, and now you're only going to play Vernon Wells against lefties. He's your hottest hitter, other than Cano, who's in his world all zone. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, even if it's just, okay, we're going to work it out, is that going to do something to this group? And then you know you have to share on it. And look how great Overbay has played. Overbay played as good in the first month and a half season than Teixeira ever played his first, because he's always a slow starter. He got more out of him than Teixeira ever given you for April and half of May.
Teixeira's always a slow starter. But when you have a team that's playing so good right now, you don't want to mix anything up. But when you got guys like, you know, Chris Nelson, who just got deactivated, but like you got guys like that playing your everyday lineup, you want to see one of those big-time guys come back.
100%.
Throw him right in the middle of the lineup. Do I think it'll affect their play? I really don't. I mean, you know, like we said, you know, you got Hafner hurt, so that will kind of help out a little bit for Vernon at DH. But Vernon has such a hot bat right now. I don't see how you could platoon him.
He's
got to
be sick.
He's
got to
be playing.
Maybe give him one day off a week.
Put him in the field at times and give someone else.
Yeah, give Ichiro a blow. Yeah, and anybody that really needs to sit out is Ichiro.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody looks at what he did when he came over to the Yankees in the second half of last season, and it was great. But you look at what he's done this year, and look at what he did this prior year and a half. He's an old man.
Yeah.
He's the guy that needs to be sitting out.
He's an old man. And when he's on, he's on. But last night I was watching him swing at some of King Felix's pitches. I'm like, what are you swinging at?
Well, because when you're a guy that's got, I mean, and not to get too, like, baseball wonky about it, but when he's got so much going on with his swing where he, you know, his hips fly open, he keeps his hands back. It's such a precise swing that he has and his crazy back control. Even the slightest decline, I mean, nobody could do what Ichiro does with the back control he has. I mean, nobody can. It's like,
such a good hit.
It's insane, but even the slightest decline, and he will decline in a heartbeat because the amount of action that he's got going on to be able to have that kind of back control is insane. You get off a little bit and you start cheating out with those hips a little too early, and those hands start coming forward, you know, you could see him getting old in a real hurry. He's the guy I think you need to get a blow until Vernon slows down.
Yeah.
Until
ride the hot bat.
Got it.
And Joe Girardi, he's the type of coach, I was talking about this earlier today, was he's the type of coach that plays by the numbers and, you know, situational, puts them in situations where, hey, they're going to throw in a relief pitcher. That would be a good time for Ichiro to come out.
Yeah.
Get us a big hit.
Yeah, go ahead. Hit. Yeah, right.
I totally agree with you on that, maybe sitting Ichiro a little bit more. They're just playing so well right now, you just don't want to mix anything up, especially, but you want to have somebody like Randerson come in, and for, you know, Jeter and Teixeira, they're on the 60-day DL right now, but, I mean, you know, I would prefer Jeter to come back because shortstop's a little shaky right
Jason
now.
Yeah, Jason Nix. You got more than you could expect out of Jason Nix.
But I'm fine with Overbay at first right now playing for the Yankees, and he's doing more than what we're asking him to do right now.
Right. I mean, the thing I worry about, and I'm a Yankee fan, is the Sheriff is a slow starter, like as consistent as anything. I mean, the guy's a slow starter now. Overbay got 6 home runs, kind of a big hit, double-digit RBIs. You look at what he's doing for you. You get Sherbeck, obviously, you've got to be your everyday first baseman. But he goes off into, you know, 2 weeks where he's hitting 150. And all of a sudden, that's when things
go to play.
You got to play him. It's Mark Teixeira, guys. He's a borderline Hall of Famer from the numbers he's put up at 32 years old. I mean, he's on pace to have a Hall of Fame career. He's got to play. That's not the debate. The debate is it going in the right now, what's going on? I mean, they are the story, in my mind, not getting nearly enough nationwide coverage as to what they're doing with the ragtag group they've got. This is like a big-time story. As a guy who doesn't like the Yankees, it's amazing to watch what they're doing.
There's a lot of fans that come down to the pub and we talk about the Yankees, and when you saw the starting lineup and you hear everybody talking about the starting lineup opening day, they're comparing it to the New York Mets.
Yeah.
They seriously, on New York radio, they're comparing the Yankees, and I don't even know this guy, who's that guy, Vernon Wells.
Yeah, it's like the beginning of Major League.
Oh, my God, the Yankees, they're going to be – it's so amazing their projected stats were at the beginning of the season. And now if you ask those same experts, they have them winning 80, 90 games.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a catch-22. But nobody expected this from the Yankees, even from a Yankee fan myself. I didn't expect it. And it's almost better to see them play this way.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be more exciting.
More exciting because you don't expect it. When you get guys like A-Rod, you get guys like Granderson, Euclid, and they're all in your lineup and they put up numbers and their career shows that they put up numbers, you expect them to win American League every single time.
Yeah. That's not exciting. When you have a team that they are – built for the postseason, and basically the regular season is just a formality. That's not fun to watch. And
it really is.
Until you get to the playoffs, but like you get a 162-game season, and in the last 10 years at least, I mean, after that initial run where it was all exciting in the late 90s, you haven't had a lot of exciting Yankee regular season baseball. it's been like, okay, you even when they have school starts, you know we'll get there. We'll get to the playoffs. And then
they do.
And this was not that season. This was the season they were supposed to fall. I predicted they would fall. And to be where they're at right now, and you look at the other teams in the East, even though the Rays are going on a nice little run now, look at the Toronto Blue Jays are atrocious and all of that. They're in great position. I mean, to run away with this division. I don't care about what the Red Sox have done and all that. And they're in great position here. I mean, right now, David Price is getting just lit up again as we watch. I mean, I know most of you download this, but he stinks. They're down 8-0. I'm cutting him on my fantasy team, one of my keepers. But let's move over. Let's stick with the Yankees really quick. What do you make as a Yankee fan? And obviously, nobody likes Mariano Rivera more than me. It's part of the reason why people think I hate Derek Jeter. But I don't hate Derek Jeter. He's like a Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's great. But when I look at this era, Mariano is such a better player. Like, I'm going to remember 50 years from now, more so than Derek Jeter. Oh. He's the best at his position, and I don't know that you could say that about anybody else in baseball that we've seen in our lifetime. I mean, you could say, without a doubt, this guy's the best he's ever done what he does. But what do you make of the farewell tour? He got a signed copy from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when he was in Cleveland of Enter Sandman, Silver Album, or whatever the hell it was. I mean, they did the same thing, and we talked about it last year, did the same thing with Chipper. I get all that they have to do it, and once one team does it, all the teams have to do it. What do you make of it? It's kind of weird.
It is, to me, I mean, if you want to pay respects and give Mariano a farewell tour, he deserves it. He put his time in. He, you know, is the best at his position, and the best part about it is he stayed with the same team throughout his whole career. So, like, you don't see that at all anymore. You see people go there. I mean, the Yankees have the money to keep him there, but you don't see a guy stay with the Yankees from. And Jeter's another one of those guys that you put into that. And I guarantee you they'll do a farewell tour with Derek Jeter. Mariano, the farewell tour, even with Chipper Jones, it's just like, to me, I'm not a big fan of it. I mean, if you want to do it, fine. If you don't want to do it, I wouldn't do it. I mean, I just don't get it. If you want to give a farewell, you give a farewell at your own stadium, or maybe if you're like the Red Sox. I mean, I don't know. It's a weird situation, like you said. I don't get it.
It's awkward to me. It's very awkward. I think it's awkward for him, and he even looks a little awkward.
Yeah.
He's up there getting an award from the, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like I said, or whatever it is, and they all got to think, like, all the cities have to outdo each other, do something unique for their city. It's like, the only reason he's getting it is because he announced he's retiring early. Like, there's been, as great as he is, there's a Hall of Famer retired every year, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, is Jim Thome going to get this? I think Jim Thome is Hall of Famer, even though a lot of people think DHs shouldn't be Hall of Famer. I mean, there's guys all the time that retire. It's maybe not as ceremoniously as he is because he's staying through his last season, but I just find it weird. I think this is awkward. It's like,
it's a great story.
It is.
You know, coming off a knee surgery, I'm not ending this way. I'm coming back. He's coming back.
Yeah.
And he's like Mariano of old, like never.
15 for 15.
Unbelievable.
16
for coming back from a knee surgery. This farewell tour is for the birds. I mean.
Yeah. I watched that game last night when it came back and he comes in. And I really sat back and looked at it. And I know in our lifetime we've seen, I mean, we saw the tail end of, like, Nolan Ryan. We've seen Pedro Martinez, Roger Clemens, all these guys. When I'm 50 years old and I'm telling my kids, best pitcher I've ever seen is Mariano Rivera.
Yeah.
This guy, I don't think I've seen him throw a ball down the middle of the plate in his life. Like, this guy, to know the amount of his pinpoint accuracy, not to mention the fact that cutter is probably the best pitch in baseball because of how late it breaks. But his accuracy of where he's throwing these balls, I mean, everything is on the paint or just off. It's like he's got the control of Maddox, as great as Maddox was, but with much better stuff. I mean, Maddox's control, he has very good stuff and change speeds and all that. But this guy also throws still right now, 93, 94,
yeah,
with the cut, runs in on your hands. Yeah, it's like, it's insane. He's the best pitcher of everything.
What's insane is he's saying this is his last year to be a Yankee, but in my mind, I feel like he could come back and do the same thing next year.
Yeah.
And he's just like,
it almost feels like add to the aura of him that, like, we never will see that guy fail.
And it's
almost like you don't always want to go. It's like Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
We are never
going to see that.
We saw this guy from the moment he broke in the major league. Guys were, you know, in our early 30s. Moment he broke in the major league.
For Wetland, right?
He was setting up for Wetland in 95, 96 and took over. We never saw this guy back. Like, we never saw him have, like, we saw, you know, Trevor Hoffman at the end of his career, Walter, and we saw Dennis Eckersley and John Franco and all these great closers, Lee Smith, name any of them. We're never going to see this guy pitch back.
No.
Ever. This guy was the best pitcher. It's like Barry Bonds. We never saw Barry Bonds play that.
It's when he comes in the game, and it's funny how you say Enter Sandman. When you hear that Enter Sandman, and we do this thing down at the club with, during playoffs, when he comes in to pitch, we put on Enter Sandman, everybody goes nuts.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they know, they when they hear that, and you're a Yankee fan, or you're any kind of baseball fan, and you know baseball, and you hear Enter Sandman, you automatically link Mariano and that song together. And when you hear that song come on, you have a good feeling, because you know you have a good shot of winning this game.
Yeah.
After next year, it's going to be sad for you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be tough, too, because you got had somebody like Soriano closing for you, and he did a great job for the Yankees last year.
Yeah.
Are they going to be able to fill that void? Like they
it's probably Robertson. I think it's probably going to be Robertson, who's great, got an amazing life on his fastball, but hey, Mariano.
Hey, Mariano.
They're going to find another Mariano here. Now, let's say in the American League East, we talked about how I predicted this is the beginning of the end, before even a lot of the injuries, before the Teixeira injury and before the Granderson injury, and before we knew the extent of Jeter's injury, I said this is going to be the beginning of the end because the era of the Toronto Blue Jays is upon us. This team, their pitching staff is too good for them to be bad. I thought, you know, adding Reyes was very good. Thought they already had a good offense. I said, you've got a rotation with Dickey, Morrow, Josh Johnson, Burley, like, how could this team ever be bad? And they are so bad.
So bad.
They are so bad. And they don't hit. They don't pitch well. And when they do win, it does happen to be like a 10-3 game or whatever. But their run differential is insanely bad. They don't have their big pop guys in Bautista and Encarnacion. I mean, good, although Bautista's heating up a little bit. They have not been good. Brett Lowry, who is like a can't-miss stud, has not been good. He's coming out a little bit, but has not been good.
Has not been good.
The ancillary parts they added, Bonifacio, has been atrocious. Mesa's Torres has been disgustingly bad. You know, Adam Lind, who is another guy who's a rookie of the year, all this stuff, he's non-existent in a platoon situation right now. I mean, they are just in shambles. I mean, can they turn it around? Or is it, when you look at them, I just looked at that was my pick to come out of the American League and play the Cincinnati Reds in the World Series. I still like my Reds pick, but the Blue Jays pick, it's like, it's obviously way too early to judge.
Way too early, I was about to say.
But, and Dickey had a good start at 9-10 strikeouts, and maybe he's coming along. You know the knuckleball is always a little precocious, but, you know, Josh Johnson was bad and then got hurt. He's coming back, he's throwing now, he's probably going to come back sometime in June. Are they going to turn around? Is there a shot that they're going to turn it around? And if they are, I mean, everything that's going wrong has to click and turn around and go, is that going to happen? Can it happen?
It's one of those things where they have so many new faces on that team, and they're all coming into this new environment. Toronto, you know, they're not, they have to adapt to their living situation. They have to adapt to, you know, a new team, new ballpark, new environment. And it's not as easy as people think. And you got to take that into consideration when you have so many new guys, but they're so good that you don't think that should be an issue, but it could be. I don't know if it is, but in the back of my mind, I have to play some of it, you know.
Yeah.
Is it going to be fixed? I think they have too good of a team that they'll be right there. And in the end, they'll be a playoff team.
I hope you're right. I agree with you to some extent. I also think with R.A. Dickey, he went on this award tour where he was everywhere. If you remember exactly when Cole Hamels was the World Series MVP, and then he went on this, he was getting interviewed by everywhere. He's on Jay Leno, he was on all these places, and he came out and he was bad the next year. And then you look at R.A. Dickey, he was just a fantastic story. He had the book, he did the book tour. He was on everything. He did, you know, he's on ESPN doing documentaries about him. They did do a movie about him, this and this and this. And it's like, does that take away from, like, what, you know, his story is that he was this grinded out, hard-working guy. And now all of a sudden he's made it, and did he lose that edge? But in addition to all of those new pieces they got, and they're all playing badly, what, there's no excuse for Bautista, Laurie.
No.
I mean, I know Aaron Sevilla is hitting home runs, but that's all he's giving.
Aaron Sevilla is that type of player.
Yeah, he is a home
run. He'll hit two, three home runs.
A little bit like Celso Amaki, I think.
Well, yeah.
He can put up 20 home runs, but he's going to have a lot of strikeouts, and he's going to be one of those guys that's 20 home runs and 50 RBIs, and that's all he does. So, you know, is that what they are? What's the explanation for this? For the existing guys who are the core, the limbs of the world, and that, why are they so bad?
Those guys should be the ones that to break these new guys in. I don't know what their explanation is. They're playing awful, but tonight, I mean, they're putting together a great game tonight.
Because they face David Price. Matt Gaethje, yeah, he might as well go play stupid softball. You face David Price, that guy stinks. And he left the game with an injury today.
But I'll tell you what, when you have such high expectations, maybe they try a little bit too hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have all these high power players coming in. You got the Cy Young, NL Cy Young on your team. You know, maybe they're expecting more out of the player where everybody should be contributing the same. Maybe they're looking for someone to take lead of this team I don't know, is Bautista a good leader saying, hey, I'm the superstar of the team?
Yeah, probably not.
Get everybody riled together and keep everybody on the same page, or I don't know the what's going on behind the scenes in the clubhouse that well to say that's the issue, but who's leading this team?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure you in your sports travels have been on teams that you look at it and you're like, our team is so stacked, they're going to be so good, and you're almost like, even if I don't play well, somebody's going to pick you up.
Someone's going to do
it. And it kind of hurts your flight, even when it's stupid beer league softball, whether it's college baseball, college lacrosse, or whatever. When you don't feel like you have to be the star, sometimes it hurts your play, and then it all trickles down. So you do need a guy, like, say, a David Wright for the Mets. Even though how bad the Mets are, David Wright's like, I don't care who
he's
we have.
He's
the
guy.
He's
Captain America.
Same with Derek Jeter. I don't care who we have. This guy might be better than me. I'm going to still hit 320 and do all that. And I'm not going to rely on Alex Rodriguez or Mark Teixeira or whoever else to do anything. I'm going to, you know, and maybe there are times when you have a collection of guys and you say to, you know, Bautista and Encarnacion, who were kind of doing it in a little bubble last year, now they're like, finally, we got all this reinforcement and, you know, I could just swing for my heels and now that's not the case.
But if you had to pinpoint the leader of that team, would you say it's Bautista?
I'd have to say it's Bautista. I would have to say that's the guy, because who else is it going to be? But I don't know him. I don't follow him.
I don't visually see. When I see the Mets, I know David Wright, the guy. When I see the Yankees,
right. You see the even the Red Sox, Arroyo and Poppy.
Yeah, Big Poppy. They're the guys. Like, Big Poppy comes out visible after the Boston bombing and gives that speech.
Yeah.
Makes a connection, and they're all rallying behind him. I don't see that in Toronto.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
who are they feeding off of?
Yeah, if a tragedy were to occur, God forbid, in Toronto, who is the guy that's going to step up to the podium and be the guy like Poppy did?
Yep.
Or, you know, 9/11 Jeter did, or Piazza did, or something like that. Who would be? I don't even have any idea who that guy would be.
They need someone to
that's
step up.
That's why we brought you in here. I had not even thought of that. And Neil would have been doing his say what, or his dude, are you serious?
Say what?
What do you think, as an aside, of the direction our website is going? We've been getting a lot of critique that maybe Tony D is getting a little off the sports world a little bit.
He's
a little too much pop culture.
I'll tell you what.
A little too much gossip stuff. We're getting I'll tell you, our hits on our website are through the roof. They're insanely high. But we are getting some pretty nasty emails to our inbox about the direction of our – what are your thoughts as an original Tri-State sports guy? Now, I have nothing to do with it. I write my own articles, Tony D runs the site.
Here's the thing. You want to draw attention to your site.
Our show is bar none the best in the world.
It is the best. And if you're out there listening, you got to tune in every week because it is the best. The one thing that the website, if it is going to venture off, at least it's getting hit.
It's getting a lot of
hits. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to venture off the sports topic a little bit,
we are, yeah.
You might not necessarily agree with it, but it's someone's opinion, and they're entitled to their opinion, and we're entitled to ours to make a response.
Right.
So those emails coming in is their opinion as well.
But they're not a lot of, like, core listeners. They're not, so as far as, like, me, all I really care about is people listening
to the show.
And I don't get a lot of people that have been listening to the show week after week and saying, now I'm not listening because it's crazy stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
It's mostly people that found their way to our site because we have these crazy articles up and
yeah.
Twitter beef and whatever, Amanda Bynes and Hot Chick of the Day. Whatever Tony does is working because you get a ton of hits. And then we'll get emails, you know, stick to sports, this and that. And I'll be like, I've never heard you your name before. It's not like you've been listening to the show every week,
yeah.
Calling in or whatever. So I'm just curious to see because
if you look at the top guys and you could take Boomer Carton, for example, I guarantee that guy's not running into Boomer Carton and when it's trying to beat the hot chick of the day.
Yeah, like, which is like the worst thing. I think that's part of that show. But, yeah.
But you don't see anybody, you know, complaining about that. Or they have a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, right. Just as long as you're tuning in at 8 o'clock on Wednesday or downloading it on Thursday.
The thing is, we're a sports show that occasionally might go off the trending topic.
Yeah.
It's going to draw people to the site, and if it draws people to the site, hopefully you listen to the show.
That's all it is. Now, just transitioning from the Toronto Blue Jays, you know, we could talk about the Dodgers some. I didn't believe in the Dodgers in the beginning. I said they weren't going to make the playoffs, but the Anaheim Angels, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, I knew they had pitching problems. I said that, but that is the least of their problems. They had, you know, you've got a middle of the order of Pujols and Hamilton. They're just both atrocious. Trumbo's actually playing pretty well, and Kendrickson playing pretty well. Trout came in, gained all this weight, you know. He has something like 3 or 4 stolen bases. And this guy was his game. He was going to be a 50-50 guy. It's like he decided, I'm going to put on all this weight and become this big, bulked-up guy. And that was his 270.
He was almost MVP last year. If it wasn't for he would have been MVP.
If Miguel Cabrera had missed Triple Crown by 1 percentage point in his batting average, he wouldn't have won. I think even as great as it was, and it was one of the best seasons I've ever seen in my life, people were dying to give that to Mike Trout. They were dying to. But you could not give it to the Triple Crown winner. And now he's a good outfielder. He's not even – I mean, he'll make the All-Star team because of his name now and what he's done, and I'm sure the fan voting will fit him in there and all. But he's not playing like an All-Star outfielder. He's definitely not playing like the future of baseball like they were, you know.
When you talk about all this hype between prospects coming into the league.
Yeah.
The two names you always heard was were Bryce Harper and Mike Trout.
Yep.
And they always had the comparison to each other. And right now, if you're looking at that comparison, Bryce Harper is far above him.
And I said
last year it was the vice versa.
Last year, because everybody was talking about we've never seen two youngsters come up either way, and I was saying Bryce Harper can't even be right now in the same conversation as Trout. I mean, the season that Trout had was still light years ahead of what Bryce Harper did.
Unbelievable.
It was like the night and day that you couldn't compare the two. And to see now what Harper has become as this grinded out guy, you could love him or hate him. He is partially unlikable the way he acts, but the guy loves baseball. He's like a Manny Ramirez in the fact that you could hate his antics and cockiness and all that. But Manny Ramirez, he's the first guy in the batting cage, worked his ass off. He was not a slack. He was a slacker as far as like running balls out, which Harper never – I mean, he always hustles and all that. But he's an unlikable guy if you're not a Nationals fan, but guy works his ass off, and everybody would want him on his team.
Do you remember when he broke into the major leagues? Before that,
he blew the kids
at the pitcher after Jack home run.
We talked about this on the show.
Right then and there, nobody's really going to like him out the gate.
Yeah, he's unlikable.
He's an unlikable guy, but for what he does on the field and the numbers that he puts up this year, especially,
he blew right past Trout. As much as you can make, and I had the Angels winning the division and making the playoffs. I had both my wild cards coming out of the West. I had Texas and Oakland. We were both playing pretty well. I mean, Texas got the best record in baseball.
Yeah.
But I don't see Anaheim turning it around. I really don't. Because they don't have the pitching to be able to – like, the reason I still think that the Toronto Blue Jays have a chance is because if their pitching clicks.
They have a closer.
They got still a staff. I still think Brandon Morrow could be a top 10 pitcher in this league. I mean, he's got that kind of stuff. He was electric last year before he got hurt. This year, same thing. Hurt here. You know, something's always bothering that guy. But if he were to click, Josh Johnson comes back. I mean, he's healthy. Normally, he's lights out whenever he's healthy. He's always had injury problems. You know what Burley will give you. And then Dickey,
they could turn it around just by their pitching. And if their guys still struggle in the field, and eventually, I mean, struggle at the bat, and they still, and eventually they're going to get Reyes back, you could see them turning it around. I don't think that the, even with Weaver coming back eventually, I don't see that pitching staff being good enough. You know, they answered with, what, Vargas? It's like, okay, Vargas is a solid pitcher for a four-starter. They don't have the pitching depth to sit there and be able to go on a sustained winning streak.
They put all their money in the bats.
Yeah.
They want to hit with the bats.
Yeah.
They want to win with home runs. They want to win. And if you look at their lineup, you're sitting saying to yourself, look at this lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got Pujols, Hamilton, Trout. Those
yeah.
three guys.
Yeah.
You had those three guys in your lineup.
And you got Trumbo.
Trumbo. Yeah, Kendrick.
Eric Ibar. It's like everybody.
Unbelievable. The only person that's living up to their name on that team right now, I believe, is Trumbo.
Yeah. Trumbo's their most consistent hitter. Kendrick's doing pretty well. He's like 290, I think, 6 home runs. That's what Kendrick is. Very good player. I'll take him as my second base on any day of the week.
If Trumbo drops off, and is playing like that, I mean, like you get Hamilton, he'll show spurts of going 4-for-4 and
yeah.
double and stuff like that. Those guys need to be more consistent as well. But like you said, is their pitching going to carry them far enough where you see pitching does matter?
Yeah.
Once King Felix out of the game, I think, got their bullpen back.
Yeah. And then, okay, you got Madsen coming back. Is he going to now, what is he going to sign? How would be the racing guy?
That's a big question.
So it's like, if you're going to go on a sustained win 18 out of 20 games, you need your pitching because your bats aren't going to go on a run for 20 games. There's going to have to be a stretch in there where your pitchers throw up zeros. Until Weaver comes back, who's on that staff throwing up zero?
And who knows the way Weaver's been pitching? Is he going to throw up that zero? That's a big question mark this year with his velocity.
Yeah.
And could he do that? And with him and his injury right now, it's definitely affecting their staff, and they need him back in the worst way.
Yeah, they are in some.
I mean, Pujols, too. I mean, Pujols is the type of player. Is he going to play up to the type of guy he was? Or is he on his decline right now?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he looks like it hurts him to run.
He looks like he's hurt.
He's younger than us. He's
32,
and it looks like, I mean, there was a thing, it may have been on Barstool Sports or one of those websites where they were timing his home to first, and it was like 7 seconds.
Oh.
It was like, I mean, on balls, like double play balls where you like you at least try to break it a little into something, it's like he just can't get his body moving.
I don't know what's going on over there, but he's got to be hurting in some type of way.
He's in big time, yeah. He's breaking.
His power's not there. Yep,
I mean, that's a guy I love. I mean, I'm saying he's one of the best hitters I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the fact that he left. I mean, he had the chance to just be a Derek Jeter, stay in St. Louis, and be.
They would have loved him.
He would have been. They would have put a statue right next to Sam Usual.
Yeah.
We got Sam Usual and Albert Pujols. Name a franchise I could say that they had those two kinds of guys. And he decided he wanted a little bit more money, which now with the tax increase out in California, he's probably not even making that much more money. And the cost of living and everything. I mean, for a week, he lived in St. Louis, Missouri. You could literally buy a block with that kind of money.
He could have bought St. Louis.
Yeah. I did section of town in Albert Pujols.
Keep his city.
Yeah. And he didn't want to do that. So, you know, that's disappointing. But we talked about Trout and Harper as a couple of big-time prospects everybody heard about that have panned out.
Big time.
And we're going to talk a little – well, maybe we'll talk about Matt Harvey right now. I mean, Matt Harvey, as a Mets fan, never pans out. As a Mets fan, you are so programmed to think every one of our prospects is think, whether it's Mike Pelfrey, Aaron Heilman on the pitching side, whether it's, Fernando Martinez. We were talking off air, Fernando Martinez – last name's Millage, Jay Payton, even on the list of these guys, Ryan Thompson from back in the 90s, all these guys that were like, oh, this is the next so-and-so, this is the next so-and-so, they all think. And you get a guy like Matt Harvey, I remember when they drafted, they were all excited about everything. You know, he was like 6th overall pick on him, I think. He was great in my all stuff. And then you see him, and he is better than you could have ever imagined.
The best thing about him, he gets better as the game goes on.
Mm-hmm. Last pitch of the game will be 99. He's like
Verlander.
And you watch him, and it's like, but my question with him is, you look at what happened with Johan, and everybody talks about what a bust he was. People forget that first season, I think he was second or third in the Cy Young Award vote. He should have had 21 wins, 22 wins. I think he finished with 16. He had so many games where he left the game in the lead, they blew it. or he lost 1-0. And then next season, he put up another very good season, same type results. And then you see it start to wear on him, and then he became a nobody. You wonder how that type of thing. You look at a guy like Jeff Samardzija in Chicago. Came out of the gate this year. He had a great season last year. Came out of the gate this year. It was very good. But then you start not getting support. Start having Carlos Malm will come in and blow your saves. Then you start, you know, pressing, and I got it. I have the last 9 innings in that. Is there any, as a Met fan, maybe I'm just being paranoid. Is there a fear that, I mean, now this guy could very easily have 7 wins. Easily.
Easily.
Probably more.
He should have 7 wins.
He should be in a position to be starting the All-Star game. He's been the best pitcher in the National League.
If he continues it, this pace, he will be.
But he could be that much better.
He could be that much better.
Am I being paranoid in the fact that, like, I mean, this guy took a weight of the franchise on him. It's the only time casual Met fans watch the games when he's pitching. Is this eventually going to wear on him? And he's going to wind up in his rookie season, have an ERA of 2.2 and be 10-12 or something like that. You know, like.
If you're a young guy and like Matt Harvey and you want to take notes on somebody that is living that situation right now.
I hope God, you stay on the thing.
Is King Felix.
King Felix, exactly.
That guy gets zero run support.
Yeah.
And he's a Cy Young. He was Cy Young. He was like 13.
Yeah.
You know, just do what you do best and don't worry. That's not in your control.
Yeah.
You can't control your guy's bat. You control your own bat.
Yeah.
You know, swing for the fences every time. Maybe you get that one run.
Oh, yeah. Let the dogs loose, Matty.
Control what you can control, and that's pitching.
Yep.
Worry about what you got to do. Don't worry about your run support. If they don't give it to you, then so be it. Where you might see an issue is guys might get out of their element and be like, oh, man, I'm down 1-0 again, and I'm going to lose this game 1-0. And you try harder and try to hit your spot team hard, and you might even leave a flat or a play.
Yeah, I can see that. You try to gas it up and all that stuff.
Just do what you do, and he's great. And like you said,
he hasn't shown any signs of that.
And if he continues that, I mean, hopefully then you can get somebody up like the young prospect, Zach Wheeler, dying for him to come up.
Yeah, he hasn't been good this year. Now he's hurt.
Now he's hurt. You get him and Harvey together, then you'll see that the Mets have a little bit of a turnaround. The problem is right now, you don't have...
Hey, Jameson.
My little daughter just joined the studio. You need some... bat, and you hope for the Mets' sake that they do make a deal to bring a bat in to help out their lineup. And there's guys out there that are going to be available, like Ellsbury and even Granderson.
Yeah.
Talking about Granderson, he's going to be available next year. The guy put up 43 home runs last year.
Oh, yeah.
Get one of those guys and plug him into your lineup and show to these younger guys that you are looking to build around. You don't have much of a core. But you could say, well, Harvey, David Wright, and Darnell maybe.
You got Darno coming up. You got, I mean, as bad as Benice is part of the core, and Daniel Murphy's part of the core.
You need another bat.
Oh, you need two more bats.
Yeah, two more bats.
You need two more bats. But this is another great segue, Kevin. You're like a natural over here. You're over here like breaking down things. Our next topic, we just talked about three prospects who have been great, and then we talked about adding a core to the New York Mets, and one of the guys that everybody was like, well, he's part of the core, is like Davis.
Now,
he came out of the gate as a rookie. This is in his fourth season, but he came out, hit 19 home runs, 70-some-odd RBI. He had a good start to the season a couple years ago. They got hurt in a crazy collision there in the infield. Last year, got up to this horrible start, but wound up finishing with 32 home runs, 90-plus RBI, and you're like, okay, this guy is part of our future. They gave him the extension, and this guy is a first base in the future, and
he has to be.
And he now, and he looks to be so.
He's going
to
get sent down.
Freaking lost. And now I'm to the point where I talk to, my former co-host and a huge Mets fan. Is this at a point where you've got to just say, look, Lucas Duda came up as a first baseman. Now, Lucas Duda's at 227. It's like this guy's standing cover.
An answer.
But he's got his 6 home runs, got high on base percentage because he walked a bunch. Do you give him a shot at first base and see? Because this whole season was supposed to be about next year. We've got money coming off the books. We're going to start spending some money. Let's see what we got. And maybe Lucas Duda is the future first baseman who could hit 250 with 30 home runs.
Here's my question. I don't remember correctly, but last year he was going through a slump. He stayed with the Mets.
Never got sent down. Everybody was
maybe it won't be a bad idea to
send him down. He's a lot better here than he was last year because he takes a lot of pitches. He didn't swing at balls out of zone. Still strikes out. But he can get an on-base percentage of .350+. That's really more important than your batting.
Send Ike Davis down. Let us tear him up down and over in Vegas. Hit the cover off the ball and bring him back up. I mean, he's playing so bad right now, and it's like one of those things where if he is your core, you have to find your swing. There's a hole in the swing somewhere. He's not finding his swing.
Right, exactly.
He's bat, and what is he batting right now? Like 140.
It's atrocious.
And what person in your right mind would be your everyday starting first baseman if 2 years back to back, except for he did hit 32 home runs.
Yeah, but he finished at .220.
You're hitting .220. That's like that type of guy who's swinging from the heels every time and trying to hit one.
I said on this show from the moment we started the show, I've always had problems with this guy with his swing. And now there's a lot of guys that have unorthodox swings. Gary Sheffield got the big hitch in his swing. Those type of guys, Sammy Sosa had that big hitch in his swing.
Yep.
But Ike Davis drops his hand as the ball's coming in and steps in the bucket. And now there's this big thing, oh, he's not stepping in the bucket anymore. He still steps in the bucket. And you ain't going to get to that outside pitch. You hit a lot of balls at the end of the bat, even that are catching the white of the plate when you're stepping in the bucket. I don't care how long your arms are. And you're just flailing out on off-speed pitches. If I'm a pitcher, it's got to be so easy to approach a guy with a swing like that. So I always were, and Rick from Milford, who calls it all the time, we've been saying this. When he had that high value, I said, this is the guy you got to trade. Because to me, his upside, if everything pans out well, is an Adam LaRoche. And his downside is he's a nobody. Mike Jacobs or somebody who's like one good season type thing. So this leads us to our top 10 list. Now, we want to talk about guys of the Ike Davis ilk, who are guys you've heard about. Everybody wants to tell you about this guy's the future of X franchise, and now they've had a couple years to show what they've got, and they haven't produced, and they're on the verge of becoming busts. They're not the Fernando Martinez that we know is a bust. They're not those guys yet, but they're on the verge of becoming busts of the Ike Davis ilk. You want me to start out? Give you my top 10?
You know what? I'm just going to feed off your top 10 because I didn't have a chance. I have a couple names. I look at your list that are on that list.
All right.
And I'll just feed off your list.
I love my list. I love everything about my list. Now, I'm going to start with a guy that when you saw this, you didn't really agree with it, and I know a lot of people aren't going to agree with it. I'm going to start out with Desmond Jennings.
I agree with that.
This is a guy that everybody talked about how great he was going to be. He was with that Desmond Jennings. He was similar to Dominic Brown, who almost made my list, but he got his decent season, so he got saved. He's on the bubble. But Desmond Jennings was a guy they were going to plug in. We have Desmond Jennings is going to be plug him right in there, and he's going to be a high-energy guy. He hits you 20 home runs, bat 300, this and that. Last I checked, Desmond Jennings was like .220. Last season, I think he hit .260. This guy's got to start producing at some point. And I'm telling you, this guy is a poor man's DJ Upton, and DJ Upton, at least he had home runs, stole some bases. I mean, Desmond Jennings is not showing me anything. If you disagree with it, why?
Desmond Jennings is the type of guy who is going to get on base, he's going to steal a lot of bases. He wasn't the big-time power guy, and he's sitting in a lineup that doesn't really produce a lot of runs. You put him in, I don't like doing this, but if you put him in a different lineup, he might be doing better, but he's not in a different lineup, and he is where he is. I would put him more on a bubble.
Okay, well, that's why he's my number 10.
He's more of a bubble guy than him.
He hasn't been atrocious.
He hasn't been atrocious to put him, for my mind, on that list.
Because he's batting .248 with 4 home runs, 11 RBIs. Last season, in a full season, .246,
yep.
13 home runs, 47 RBI. And in 2011, when he was supposed to splash onto the scene, he had .259 with 10 home runs, 25 RBI. So he's got a career batting average now in 3-plus seasons.
How many stolen bases is he?
Right now, when I have it, it's not showing stolen bases. But we can get that up. See if you could look that up on your computer. But he's not like this guy's a 40 stolen base guy. I mean, the guy's been .248 in 3-plus seasons. I mean, how much time are we giving him? If you're going to be a speed guy, you sure as hell got to do a lot better than
.248. You got to get on base.
Yeah.
You got to get on base.
So when is he going to turn it around? I mean, how much time do we have to give this guy before we start thinking, maybe he's not really going to be much more than an average outfielder?
I mean, right now he's on that bubble list.
Yeah,
so you can put him on that list. I mean, you just don't want to sell the guy out yet because
He's on the bubble.
He is on the bubble. He is number 10. He's not yet.
And these are not guys that are bust yet. They could all prove me wrong. We talked off the air, too, about guys like Alex Gordon that took a little while to get going.
Yeah.
Now he's a stud in this league. There's a lot of guys that do take a little while, but this leash is getting shorter and shorter on Desmond Jennings, in my opinion. Now, he's going to be there because, you know, there's a Tampa Bay Rays, and they're going to go out and add a guy like Ellsbury or something like that. So he's their guy. But how many stolen bases does this guy have?
He had 31 last year.
Wait, 31 stolen bases. That's very good.
That is good. So
he's got five that he's been thrown out three times.
He got thrown out two times last year.
Yeah. So he that's okay. But the guy's got he had a 314 on base percentage last year, 309 on base percentage this year. When you have an on base percentage that low, and you're not hitting home runs,
the one thing I would say is very early in the season, and you hope to see for Tampa Bay's sake. And he bounces back and is the player that he's expected to be, maybe hit like 280. You're not expecting a lot of home runs from the guy. You're expecting to steal bases and score a lot of runs. And right now, he's not doing that.
No. He only has doubles. It's not like the guy's slugging percentage is 400 right now. That's pretty bad. An OPS of your career, 3.730, is not good for an outfielder.
That's
not very good. Now, number nine, I'm going over to the Bronx. This is a guy that I was so dead wrong on. This is a guy I was screaming from the top of the mountain that this guy needs to be the starting first baseman when Sherrod went down, needed to, maybe be the starting third baseman and let Euclid go over to first. But I said, this guy could be a 300 hitter, 20 home runs, all of that. Eduardo Nunez. He had his chance. Finally, after all this time, this is a guy they didn't want to trade. They had all these trade offers, and he was one of their guys. Even though he had Jeter, they didn't want to trade him. We know he can't be an everyday shortstop in this league because he can't play.
He can't field.
So, if you can't field, you better be a good hitter.
He's got his
chance handed to him. 27 games he's played this year. My man is hitting a cool 200 with zero home runs. And I think that says four RBI. I mean, this guy, and now he's 26 years old. He can't play the field. Where is his role in the major leagues going forward? Where are you going to even find value for him on a trade market if you're the New York Yankees? This guy's not a Yankee because you can't find a role on the New York Yankees at 200 with no home runs through 95 at bat. So where is this guy going to fit into a major league roster in his career?
It is one of those things where you watch baseball enough and you see a guy make a great play in the field,
mm-hmm.
and you see him come off the bat the next inning and he'll get a big double or he'll get a big triple. You almost wonder if this guy's fielding is affecting the way he's hitting.
Yeah.
You make a bad play in the field, does that carry over to your plate?
Absolutely.
At the plate?
Exactly. Absolutely.
He's playing so bad in the field, you just don't know, because he does show glimpses where it's like, man, he just tore the cover off that ball.
Yeah. He has a big home run in the playoffs, everybody talks about, because nobody else is hitting. And so I really thought, I'll admit when I'm wrong, I was so dead wrong on this guy. I drafted him in two of my fantasy leagues thinking this guy's going to get his time. This guy's going to have 500 at-bats this year. He's going to put up 20 home runs, 80 RBIs.
This is his time to prove himself as a Yankee, and he's not doing it because Derek Jeter's on the DL,
yep.
and they're almost handing him the position.
Go ahead.
You're not going to sit
Jeter. Nobody
go show us what you got, and he's not showing us what we got, and I agree he should be on that list 100%.
So that's my number nine. My number eight. He's one of the Royals on my list, Eric Hosmer. He's a guy, another one. I have a special hatred for the Royals, and it's nothing to do with the Royals. It's the fact that there was so much hype around their farm system. More so than I've ever seen they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It said, this was in 2011, World Series champs 2015. Oh, we have the best farm system. We were all this. They have Eric Hosmer to go with Billy Butler and Alex Gordon and all these guys, and those two guys are stuck. But Eric Hosmer had that good rookie season. He was bad last year, and he didn't do much better this year. I mean, what are his numbers this year? What do we got for Eric Hosmer?
Let's put it this way. His rookie season, he had over 500 at-bats. He hit 19 home runs. He batted 290.
Yeah.
You look at him ever since he declined in the worst way, and you just wonder, is this guy going to be a 250 hitter?
Yeah, this guy had an OPS. That doesn't sound like a stat geek. This guy is a first baseman. I know he was 22 last year. OPS of 663.
he makes somehow after the chair injury, he is the best first baseman America has to offer in the World Baseball Classic somehow. And his OPS is lower this year than it was last year. 662 for a first baseman is insanely low.
When you have a guy and all you heard is, yeah, two guys in our farm system, Hosmer's one of them. He's going to be our face, and he's going to break out, and he's going to change the Kansas City Royals, and he's going to make them into contenders. His rookie season, you agree with that? Ever since, no way.
All I got to say, with last point on this guy, he's got 134 at-bats this year. Forget about his average, isn't that? My man playing first base with six extra base hits. Six extra base hits and 134 at-bats. That is, we could look up Ruben Tejada. I bet you Ruben Tejada has as many. And Ruben Tejada is a light-hitting shortstop. And this guy is a first baseman on a team that's supposed to be on the come. That's like, okay, here we go. We're the Kansas City Royals. We got Billy Butler. We got this. We got big game James Shields. And sure enough, here he is. It's six extra base hits. That is just really, really bad. What do we got for Ruben Tejada this year? We got nine doubles. Got nine extra bases. Ruben Tejada, who is terrible as a hitter, got 50% more extra bases than Eric Hosmer.
That is insane. And it is a little early to be putting him on this kind of.
He's on the bubble though. He's got
all these guys are on the bubble
because they're all guys that they're not busts yet.
They're supposed to be superstars.
They got a Hooper, get off the pot.
You can't even say a sophomore slump because you're not a sophomore.
No, this guy now, he's got to be on the come now, start making some big impact on the offensive side. Now, we got number seven, I got Gordon Beckham, another guy, first onto the scene. Very highly touted when he got drafted, came onto the scene, was fantastic, pitching third base there for the White Sox, and then has been atrocious really ever since. I mean, the guy came onto the scene his rookie year at 14 home runs, batted 270. The next season at 9 home runs, batted 250. The next season hit 230. Last season, people were claiming, like, oh, it was just, including my old Colts, oh, it was just Guillen and screwed them all up. Now they got Robin Ventura. He changed them. They talked about what a bounce back season he had. He made that at 234.
This guy is 234. He's not even an everyday player anymore, so he deserves to be on his list. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you look at his stats, it just declines every year. And when you have high expectations of a young player to come in and do well, it's going to affect your outlook of your team.
He might be not be on this list because he already is a bust.
He could be.
He could already be considered a bust.
This year, if he doesn't produce well, he's a bust.
Sayonara. You're Ryan Rayburn, my man.
There
you go. You're out of this league or, relegated to just minor league invites. To spring training. Number six, back to Kansas City, your friend and mine, Mike Moustakas. He was the real face of that Sports Illustrated article. This guy was going to be a 40 home run guy. He was just a can't miss guy. Now, all these guys are young. Hosmer and Moustakas are young, so this could change around. But he was just a cannot miss guy.
Cannot miss.
Came out last year at 242 with 20 home runs. And 124 strikeouts, so he's going to swing a lot. This year he's 193. I mean, I know he had four home runs, but he just had a couple this last week.
193.
This guy's hitting 193. This is another guy that was Evan Longoria. He was named a great third baseman, Kung Fu Panda. He was that guy offensively.
And the thing is, when you get a guy in your farm system with all that hype, and he's playing a hot corner, because you don't get too many players like that at third base, you say to yourself, man, we're lucky to have this guy in our farm system. He's going to come up. He's going to be the next David Wright, or he's going to be the next, I want to compare him to Miguel Cabrera, but he's going to be a superstar in this league, and we got him on our team, and he's doing absolutely nothing for you.
He's got 7% of 336.
He's doing nothing for you. I mean, we do fantasy baseball, and you look at young guys like that, and those are the guys, the sleepers that you put on your team, and those guys will project you. And you can even translate that into real baseball, because those are the type of guys where you find those guys, you plug them into your lineup, and he's going to be the changing face of our team. And you have two guys on this list, Hosmer and Moustakas,
yeah,
that are underperforming. you got a lot of question marks for, in that organization over there, and some a lot of concerns for those two guys.
Absolutely. This is World Series champ 2015, according to SI. All right, we only got 10 minutes left. We got to speed things up a little bit. Number five, I got Dustin Ackley. He's on the verge of being a complete bust as well. In the ilk of Gordon Beckham.
Yep.
The other one, I think he's number two pick overall when they picked him. He's really high. Came in as an outfielder. They converted him to second base. Came out of the gate really good. Had just a terrible season last year. I thought he would bounce back into this year. I didn't draft him in my fantasy league, but he's a guy out of my radar. And he's been equally as bad this year. He's turning around a little bit. I know the last week he did okay. This guy is just, I mean, for a guy that they targeted to be another, like, cornerstone of their franchise. He's 26 last year, he's in 231.
So all these guys that you see that on these lists, you see their first year, they had a lot of problems. Every year since, they're declining.
Yeah.
That's why these guys are on the list. They had a lot of promise. They showed it.
Yeah.
But then when it's like almost.
The pitchers made the adjustments. This guy's got a slugging percentage. 281. Pitchers have higher slugging percentages than that. That's insanely low.
You have a lot of expectations on these guys, and when you see it, and you're like, and you see them do well the first year, and they seem to go down every year since.
Yeah.
It's not a good feeling.
You saw Hosmer's bat. Dustin Ackley has 4 extra base hits and 120 some out at bat. Number 4 is where I put Ike Davis. We talked about Ike Davis.
Yeah.
I put him on there a little high, maybe because I'm a Met fan, but he's really he's got his time is waning to me to show what he's got, because the Mets, they really are serious about, okay, we're a team built for 2014, 2015. We got Harvey, we got Wheeler, we got Neese, we got some things going on. We signed right long term, got Darno coming up. Is this guy, you need a good first baseman to be successful in this league? He ain't doing it. So
he ain't doing it. And like I said before, if I was in that organization, that would be a serious question for me. Should we send this guy down
I think you really got to consider it. Number 3, I got Pedro Alvarez. He's a guy with huge home run potential, always. But he just he has insane strikeout numbers and insanely low batting average, almost like Adam Dunlight, but he doesn't hit 50 home runs. You know what I mean? He can hit home runs. This guy has prolific power.
This guy, when he came into the scene, he was another guy playing the hot corner.
He's a guy fantasy wise you need to have.
He was like a top 10.
Oh yeah,
cross, like guy to have on your team, and he's just not. He's not showing it. And when you have guys like McCutcheon in that lineup,
yeah. Starling
he's
Marte,
gonna protect him. Yeah, he's gonna protect this guy. Marte is showing.
Yeah,
he's got
the 340 or whatever. Yeah, and you get a guy that can. It's just like Jose Tabata for the. They love him. This guy's gonna have a batting title. He's now a role player. He's on the verge of being the same way.
Alvarez had all this hype behind him. Marte had the hype behind him, not as much hype as Alvarez, and he's not putting up the numbers. And he's another good guy to have on this list. But he is a disappointment.
Yeah. Number 2, I got Cameron Maybin. Cameron Maybin came up to the league. I think he was like 20 years old when he first came up with the Tigers. Got traded to the Marlins, didn't do much there. Moved over to San Diego and put up a good season, and they got this big contract because they said, okay, here he comes. Here's Cameron Maybin. Now, Cameron Maybin currently, now, I know it's early in the season, hitting 091. Hitting 091.
This guy's been in the league long enough where he could be a bust.
Yeah, he's only 26. He signed 5 years, $25 million, something like that. But you know, off of a couple of good months that he had, and he's a bust. This guy's a bust. This guy, they thought he's like a Dexter Fowler type, kind of do it all, big body, good speed, can hit for power, can do this. He's never had double digit home runs in his career. He's been in the league how many years? Seven years.
7 years.
He's parked for 7 years in the league. He's never had double digits one.
He
had 500 at bats each of the last two seasons. Really, I mean, 248 batting average. What does this guy do well?
He's
got 311 on base percentage, which is clear.
And one year he had 40 stolen bases, so he's.
So that's where he got the money. Yeah.
That's where he got the money right there.
So, and at number one, and the Yankees will appreciate this, I got Jesus Montero. But he was a guy that they thought he was such a good hitter. The New York Yankees, who have endless amounts of money, they were going to make him a 23-year-old DH, which is unheard of to make a 23-year-old sign a DH. But he was so good, they had to find a way to get him in the lineup.
because he was that good. Jesus Montero, this guy was the prize of the franchise, prize of the thing. And that's where you will start to wonder about Brian Cashman. Everybody says he's only a good general manager because he's all this money. And granted, Pineda hasn't panned out yet, but he got hurt. He's going to come up at some point this year probably and help them a little bit. But they got rid of him, and he's done nothing. I mean, he got plenty of opportunity last year. Was there every day, DH slash catcher out in Seattle, did nothing at 260 with 15 home runs, and this year he's even worse at 200.
This guy, when you have a catcher that has, especially a catcher, you're getting hype like you have somebody like Mike Piazza, who's going to be jacking all those home runs. That's the added bonus to your lineup to get somebody
that's
like
that. That's what his value was.
That was this guy's value. That's what he got traded for, and he's not doing anything with it. And like you said, this list is a bubble list. There's a couple guys on this list that need to perform better, or they're going to be flat out bust.
Before they joined the bust list of prospects. That's a good list. If there's anybody that we missed, please hit us up on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, or on TriStateSportsGuys.com. Obviously, I'm going to post this list, my list, to the site, so you could comment on it if you want. We got about 5 minutes left. Just touch on two other subjects. Got to talk a little golf. Basically, the fifth major this year happened this weekend. Good. I mean, we could talk about Sergio's collapse, but really the story was the whole controversy happened on Saturday, where Tiger Woods reached for his bag while Sergio was addressing the ball. It wasn't really in his backswing, but he was addressing the ball, ready to hit. Tiger claims that the marshal told him he'd already hit. So a couple of marshals came out, said that's BS. We didn't tell him that. Now he's making us the scapegoat. Then a couple other marshals came out today and said, no, we did tell him that, but it was after he had already reached for his bag. So what does that mean? He already reached for his bag. You know the rules of it. Now, Sergio wound up collapsing, so he kind of looks like the baby in the whole thing, but Tiger Woods is so unlikable to me. So unlikable. I hate that guy.
That right there, if anyone knows golf etiquette more than anybody, it's Tiger Woods.
That's what you
he knew home. Damn well what he was doing, and he did it, and it worked. More power to him, but you're going to get people that are going to hate you even more now.
Right.
You already have a bad rap for your history, what happened the last couple, over the last 2 years. He did it. It worked. But it's not going to help your reputation anymore.
No, but I don't think he even cares about it. He doesn't
care.
The guy, for the whole argument of whether he's back, the guy's back. He won four tournaments as his first game.
He's back. If he cared about his reputation, when he had that bad drop, he would have admitted he had the bad drop and withdrawn himself from the tournament.
Yeah, there's no way. He don't care.
If anybody that cared about integrity of the game of golf, they would have pulled himself.
He admitted he screwed up.
He admitted it.
Same guy that
signed the home score card.
You know,
get out.
All that stuff. I mean,
he knew what he was
doing. Yeah.
He knew.
And now that doesn't take anything away from the collapse of Sergio Garcia. It just shows you how weak he is, and he is. That guy was supposed to be the next Tiger Woods, the European Tiger Woods.
The last two holes, he had three balls in the water?
Yeah, he went six over in
the last three holes.
Six over, yeah. And then we're going to close the show with the breaking story of the day. The guy who I thought was going to be starting for the New York Jets this year, David Garrard, but they signed to a two-year deal, which means they must have given this guy a physical. You don't sign a 2-year deal who hasn't played since 2010 and is taking a snap in the NFL. He signed to a 2-year deal. Today, he's calling it quits. He's packing it in because his knees are too bad. So he's packing it in. The Jets signed a 2-year deal so the Jets get their money back. But that means, A, Mark Sanchez is making the team. He has to at this point. They cut Tebow. You're going to need three quarterbacks. You need McElroy making the team as well. So does that make Geno Smith it's clearly his job to lose.
Geno Smith is put this way. He put up unbelievable stats for West Virginia last year. And when you saw that pick, I was kind of like, oh, why did they make that pick? But now it's panning out. Is this guy's going to be your quarterback? You might have to start off with Sanchez as your starter, but Geno Smith is your future.
Here's the thing I worry about. If Geno Smith doesn't start opening that, that means – It's his job to lose. They are so down on Mark Sanchez right now. If he can't win this job,
then how is he ever going to be a successful quarterback? I know it takes a while, and I don't believe in just throwing a rookie. Although it's worked in the last few seasons, Cam Newton and RG3 and all that, and Andrew Luck, obviously, I like the idea of the Aaron Rodgers, Chad Pennington, let them sit for a little while,
yeah.
Right? But if he can't beat out Mark Sanchez right now,
you know what the thing is? He has nobody to learn from, so that's the big question mark. He's going to have to learn this on his own.
Yeah.
How to be successful in the NFL.
You could see Greg Papore starting game one. Maybe. Could see it.
I would see Geno Smith over him, but
I would too. But
he's going to have to learn on his own.
But Papore is the veteran, like a state veteran. Like, crazy as that sounds right now. Well, that's the end of our show. Thank you, Kevin Ireland, for joining us with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out, www.tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/Tri-State Sports Guys, or on Twitter @Tri-State_Sports. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out next week. Thank you.